This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today we are enjoying a charcuterie platter.
Yes, thank you to listener Susan for suggesting this.
I mean, thank you to me for procuring the meat.
This is so good.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't just sat around. You know, we go through like periods in our household of buying salami and things like that. And I haven't had any really in like a month. Oh, this feels right.
Yeah, I think same.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So here we are. Let's go down memory lane. I think we should first say that these are also called like charcuterie plate. Charcuterie boards is what you'll find if you start Googling.
I served on the Seattle charcuterie board. It's a volunteer position.
You're funny. What do you do on the charcuterie board? I'm going to make you keep going with this joke.
I'm really glad you asked. I mean, mostly like we're there to serve the people.
Okay.
We're there to serve the people cured meats.
Okay.
And sometimes like accompaniments such as nuts and cheeses and breads. Mm-hmm. That reminds me, I have some salted hazelnuts that will be really good with this.
Oh yeah. This episode's off to a strong start.
Good choices here, right? Let's just not even talk at all. This is going to be a pure like ASMR chewing episode.
I need to just eat a little bit more.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, Matthew, so what I recommend is take a little thin slice of baguette, spread it with some butter. Okay?
I'm afraid of butter, but I'll try.
You're afraid of butter? What?
You know this about me.
You're afraid of butter, like, as a condiment?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit. I keep forgetting all these things about you. It's almost like I don't even know you. Now, put this on top.
The prosciutto?
Yeah, kind of like pave it with prosciutto. Make sure there's prosciutto on the whole thing.
They pave paradise, put up a prosciutto. Anything else?
And now eat it. But you're probably going to have to kind of like really hold on to the prosciutto.
Oh, thanks. Any more instructions before I dive in?
No, eat it.
Okay, that is good. This is Kerrygold Irish butter.
Isn't that good?
Mm-hmm.
Like it does a little something extra with like the pork fat flavor.
Which on Halloween, they rebranded as Scary Old Irish Butter.
Where did that
come from? Scary old pirate's butter. This is an Amster Burton family running joke that has been running for a very long time, which is that for anything in the world, we can say on Halloween, such and such turns into like, you know, so this, but like, you know, instead of toast, it's ghost, right? Oh, yeah. Your family doesn't have any stupid traditions,
no, my
right?
family has a lot of dumb songs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we don't have that.
Chunky stuff being one of them. That's a favorite.
What was the one? Oh, Crispy Boys is the one I taught you to go along with Chunky Stuff.
Yeah, Crispy Boys. I did refer to Crispy Boys the other day when we were making like oven French fries. And I referred to Crispy Boys.
Of course.
Yeah.
And we had some crumpets from the crumpet shop.
God, I love it when you talk about crumpets. Go on.
And I referred to them as Holy Boys. And then I said, wait, that sounds like my chastity-focused fraternal organization. And things are going great. Everyone loves the chastity.
Everyone loves the chastity. Oh, everyone does love chastity.
It's, mm-hmm.
Mm. Oh, I feel like I could be chased for the rest of my life if I just can have butter and prosciutto.
That's the thing. Then we're going to like pivot into charcuterie chastity.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
This is great.
We're still recording, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I know we say this a lot, but this really is our worst episode.
I'm not quite ready yet.
Mm-mm.
Okay, tell me about these hazelnuts.
These are my favorite snack. They're just premium dry roasted Oregon hazelnuts. It says lightly salted. I think they're heavily salted, and I'm here for it.
Wow, nice.
And I got some salami for Christmas, and I like sliced it up and had it with some hazelnuts, and I'm like, oh, this is a good combination.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want like another half slice of the Genoa salami.
Molto Italiano.
I just said Genoa salama.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's go down memory lane.
So I think that I first encountered the idea of like a charcuterie platter or like an assortment of charcuterie presented all together when I used to work in catering. So
sure, of course.
So yeah, like in high school, I started working for a caterer in Oklahoma City. Shout out to Linda Tripp. Not the same one from the Monica Lewinsky thing. Different one. And I learned a lot about catering working there.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot remember whether it was there or during my years of working in catering in Seattle that I learned about how to like present charcuterie.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned that because like I was a little nervous because like I got a couple of things at QFC and I was like, I'm going to like put these things on a cutting board, but I don't know if it's going to look like a charcuterie platter and whether that's important to my co-host Molly.
It's not important to your co-host Molly. But basically, so here in Seattle, both Brandon more so than me, used to work for Boat Street Kitchen.
Sure.
Which was like the lunch and catering arm of Boat Street Cafe.
You have a lunch arm and a dinner arm?
I do. Okay. I do. I keep the other one tied behind my back when I'm not using it. Anyway, so Susan Kaplan.
hence your catchphrase, I can eat you with one hand tied behind my back.
Exactly. Susan Kaplan ran Boat Street Kitchen. She did the catering side of things. But Renee Erickson, who is still a huge part of the Seattle restaurant scene, Renee Erickson's aesthetic also had a big impact on what we were making.
Okay, so what is Renee's platter aesthetic?
Okay, well, so Renee has very strong opinions about, or at least at the time that I was working for her, she did, strong opinions about how charcuterie should and shouldn't be displayed. Like, for instance, you know how, like, if you get, like, a cold cut platter from Safeway, the cold cuts are going to come like rolled up like cigars.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so there's you cannot do that at a high-end catering function.
You can't just like grab some Oscar Mayer.
Well, no, you can't take like, you just don't present charcuterie ever rolled up.
No, I also get that.
Don't do like dumb little rosettes and things. The idea is to have it look somewhat natural, but also like have this look of abundance and balance.
Natural, so, like a salami that formed naturally
exactly.
In the forest.
It just congealed.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Anyway, so for instance, if we were serving prosciutto, let's say, we would take thin slices of prosciutto and you would sort of hold them up and you would kind of lightly twist them.
Oh.
And kind of turn it into this sort of like lightly twisted sort of like little voluminous bundle, which you would then arrange on a platter.
That sounds very similar to rolling into a cigar.
It wasn't, though. Okay. It doesn't look that way. And then the other thing is, you know, we never did like, I think when a lot of people, so if you Google charcuterie board or charcuterie platter right now, you will find like every major blog ever, including Pioneer Woman, whose brand does not seem to overlap with charcuterie board.
Yeah, I agree.
Even Pioneer Woman has like a tutorial on how to make a charcuterie board. And for the most part, when you see them, they are arranged for like purely food styling purposes.
Yeah.
So literally everything is jammed together on a plate and you've got like these crackers standing on end, and you've got this salami that's fanned out, and you've got,
and everything's been brushed with a glaze.
Yes. I don't like my food to be touching too much.
Okay. Yeah.
And there is definitely a way to make like a beautiful spread of charcuterie and the other things that often come with it, like nuts, olives, cheeses, some like jams or honeys, and put them all out and have it not look like something contrived for like a blog photo shoot.
I mean, I think you just get a bigger platter so you can space things out more.
I think that is part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your introduction to charcuterie
boards? I really strongly associate this with the e-gullet era when I was like, you know, moderating this food discussion site and going out places a lot more than I do now.
Well, you were also writing for Seattle Times.
I was also writing for Seattle Times, but really like the charcuterie side of my food education really happened like online.
Was this was also early in the salumi era.
Yeah, so there was salumi,
so that was a big deal.
And there were other
hold on, wait, we should clarify that salumi is like a charcuterie business,
yes,
in Seattle.
That makes cured meats and also like fresh Italian meats, mm-hmm, and sandwiches and stuff, very tasty. Mm-hmm. And so I remember there was a lot of talk about like, you know, the best charcuterie can't even be imported into the U.S. Things like jamon iberico and mortadella from Bologna and stuff, with both of which can be imported now. Mm-hmm. But it was always like, you know, culatello was something people talked,
yes,
about a lot.
Oh, culatello.
And so I remember there was a lot of elitism going on, mm-hmm, but also I tried and learned about a lot of new kinds of salamis and cured meats. I think I had like prosciutto San Daniele for the first time around then, and Serrano ham, and you know, would go down to Di Laurenti and try stuff from there, and salumi. There were a couple other local places.
This was when we were all learning about lardo.
Lardo, yes. Mm-hmm.
Everybody was really into lardo, so you could like taste the fat.
Right. There was Salumeria on Hudson was a place that existed for a while. It's now Tutabella, closed many years ago. There was a place in Bellevue, I think, called Porcella or Porcella. Does
that
this sound familiar? That did really good salamis.
I remember going and waiting in line at Salumi for a sandwich.
Oh, sure.
And I remember somebody complaining in line in front of me that the sandwich was $8, which today, like, that seems so sweet and quaint.
And like also, I can get two meals out of a salumi sandwich.
Oh, they're
easy.
Huge. Yeah. They are so massive. Do they still make sandwiches?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
I think the shop moved, but I was there, 2019, maybe.
We should meet down there sometime.
Yeah.
God,
those,
yeah,
are really good.
Really good sandwiches. They would always kind of, like, make me feel a little sweaty.
Oh, yeah. They have, like, two different sauces, like an herb, uh-huh, sauce and a garlic sauce, maybe, both of which are like olive oil based, and they put a lot of both of them on the sandwich, and
then
great.
There's like roasted onions, roasted,
yes,
peppers,
oh, yes,
and a lot of salami.
I also learned when doing a taste test during this era that you can eat pancetta uncooked.
I remember learning this, well, back when Mario Batali was still a benevolent figure,
sure,
on food television. I remember learning it from Molto Mario.
Okay, yeah. Have you tried it?
I have not.
I have. I was not sold on the experience.
Have you had lardo?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I had a pretty tasty,
yeah,
experience.
Is it
eating
really
pure
that
pork fat?
Different? No. So, yeah, I should probably try raw pancetta again.
Yeah, yeah, true. So as I was thinking about charcuterie platters, I was thinking about how much, well, when these first became something that people were blogging about, how much time was spent on like the right kind of platter or board, and,
yeah,
and like very specific things started being sold.
And the board had to be groaning, right?
Yeah, it had to be a groaning board.
Yes.
audibly. Had to be groaning audibly. But no, there. So do you remember when there were like slate boards?
Yes, I do.
So these were definitely, I think, primarily for cheese. But where there's cheese, there's charcuterie.
That's true. One tends to attract the other.
Yes. Anyway, so there were those slate boards that everybody was doing for a while so that you could like write on it with chalk and label what things were.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Then there were...
Those things must break all the time,
oh
right?
Oh my God, seriously. Yes. I think that a lot of people maybe who got married in the early days of charcuterie platters in U.S. food trends, uh-huh, got like a special cutting board with like handles at,
yep,
the side to be able to serve their charcuterie platter and cheese platter on this board.
And a special like groaning circuit,
yes,
in it.
What about a marble slab?
I like the idea of a marble slab. It doesn't seem very practical.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I mean, what a pain to wash.
I mean, it seems practical if you're starting a creamery.
And then, of course, you know, if you buy one, I mean, I think these days you could probably buy a charcuterie platter at like QFC or something, yeah. Right? And it would probably come on like the shiny black plastic tray.
You mean not just the platter, but with the meats also. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it would probably come on the shiny black platter that...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So there's that. There's mm-hmm. that kind of presentation. And then, so Matthew, when you have all the times that you've assembled charcuterie platters...
Yeah, this was the first time.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, what have you
was
assembled
it really? I don't know. Like, I'm sure like back in the day, like I threw together some salamis.
Yeah. Would you have done it on a cutting board? Would you have done it on like an oval platter? You guys register for stuff?
We did register for stuff. I don't remember like what we registered for. Mm-hmm. I'm sure some of it is still around in our kitchen.
Brandon and I registered for like so much serving stuff. And this seemed like normal to us at the time.
Oh, yeah.
I think because it was the culture, but also because we worked in catering. Like it just seemed like you were constantly having to make big things for people. And so you needed a lot of like platters and like low, like dishes with like straight sides and stuff.
Yeah. Having said that, like we do have a couple of oval platters, and whenever I serve dinner on one of them, it feels a little bit special compared to like just like hucking it in a bowl or a regular plate.
In early COVID or maybe mid COVID lockdown, Ash and I went on, this was September of 2020. For our birthdays, we rented a friend's house on Lummi Island, mm-hmm. and you can't take a ferry to Lummi in September because there's literally one ferry that holds like 15 cars that goes back and forth to the sure. island all day. And they service it in September. So you can only walk onto a passenger ferry.
Okay.
But you can take your bikes. So we took our bikes and all the groceries we needed in like a kid's trailer that
it
we borrowed from some friends. It was epic. And we biked onto the passenger ferry and then biked to our friend's house on Lopez. Anyway, we got there. Of course, we had some weed chocolate.
Yeah.
And then we proceeded to make dinner. And we could not, for some reason, decide which of the many different plates that our friend had available to use.
Oh, yeah, the paradox and of choice.
And so Ash got out this huge oval platter and plated our dinner in little piles on this oval platter.
I love it.
And it was just part of that fun, dumb weekend we had.
Our largest platter.
Wow. Okay.
Our largest platter has a pirate ship on it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Want me to get it down?
No, it's cool.
Okay.
I can just imagine it.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. So yeah, I mean I've got platters, you've got platters.
Yeah, but I don't arrange charcuterie on them ever.
If you were to like do kind of a summery picnic dinner, but just in your house, say with like, you know, some bread. A groaning board of charcuterie, maybe a big salad or something.
Oh, that sounds great.
Would your family like get down on that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I always forget that I could do stuff like
that. Me too.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. Thanks, Molly.
Yeah, thank you, Molly.
Okay.
And I feel like I went to QFC this morning at like 8 o'clock, and I was like, they're not even going to be slicing stuff at the deli yet. I'm just going to like get stuff that I can get
it's
off the
pre-sliced.
Shelf, like by the cheese counter. And I'm very happy with this selection
yes.
of three things.
Yeah, no, it's delightful.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
How thick do you want your meats?
Pretty thin. Not Well, prosciutto, like paper thin, is great. Salami's like, I don't know, like a millimeter.
I think this one is a little too thick.
Okay, yeah.
So this is the Murray's like pre-sliced Genoa salami, which I think is delicious. I've only had it before like in sandwiches. And I think it's a little thick for a charcuterie platter. I would say
that, I'm fine with this thickness. This works for me.
Okay. I would say that in general, I want meats on a charcuterie platter thinner than I usually would get them for a sandwich.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Okay.
So yeah, let's talk about what we got today, like the little platter that I put together. First of all, I did it on like a small wooden cutting board. Oh, and you asked me like, what kind of platter do I want? I feel like wood and charcuterie really go together for me.
Well, let's talk about the first salami that you've got over there, because you really need a cutting
salami.
Board for this.
Yes, because I got the Cremonelli Soppressata uncured Italian salami. It's not really uncured. That's a lie.
Wait a minute. Uncured?
So, okay, this is a thing I think we've talked about on the show before that's just like a pet peeve of mine. Like, people got the idea that like nitrates and nitrites are bad for you, which is not even really true, but manufacturers responded by replacing pure nitrates and nitrites with celery juice and celery salt, which contains naturally high levels of exactly the same thing.
This is like,
and then they can say uncured.
Okay, but this is like avoiding MSG, but really enjoying like prosciutto,
and
parmesan,
yeast,
and soy sauce.
Right.
Okay.
It's exactly that. But anyway, so it's a Cremonelli Soppressata, definitely cured Italian salami, northern Italian recipe with garlic and wine. It's great.
Would you slice a little bit more of that?
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, so this came as maybe like an 8-inch long salami, maybe an inch and a half in diameter. I mean, the nice thing about a cutting board is that it's functional, right? But
the nice thing about a cutting board is that you can cut things on it.
I do think, though, that if I were serving this, I would make sure to cut a lot of it and not put a knife and the salami out on the board. That's kind of a pet peeve of mine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because, like, you're in the middle of chatting with someone. You don't want to stop and focus on, like, paper-thin slicing.
That's what's happening right now.
And you have to put, like, two hands on it, one on the salami, one on the knife.
You
can't keep one hand tied behind your back.
Nope.
So anyway.
challenge accepted. I'm going to try and slice this with one hand.
Okay, so Matthew, what else do we have?
Okay, so I got the Murray's Genoa salami pre-sliced, which is very good, and I'm fine with the thickness. And I got some La Quercia prosciutto picante rubbed with fennel and red chili, which is very tasty, but like the slices all stuck together in the package.
It's really tasty, though.
Prosciutto really, really should be like sliced to order,
yeah,
I think.
Agreed. And then, Matthew, you kindly set out some salted butter for me, which is something that I think I got the idea from those Boat Street days, because we would often make like little, we called them Melba toasts, but it was basically thinly sliced baguette that we brushed with olive oil and baked so it got really crispy.
Oh, I love that.
And we would take those Melbas, spread them with butter.
Take those Melbas.
Spread them like, you know, fairly thickly with butter, right? So you could see the butter on there. And the butter was cold, so that it didn't melt into the Melba. And then we would put a little bit of prosciutto on top. Mm-hmm. And that was so delicious. And I really love the flavor of good butter, particularly with a more mild salumi type thing like prosciutto.
Yeah, so we had that with untoasted Melba, meaning baguette slices. Very good. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of afraid of unmelted butter, and I enjoyed it.
Good job, Matthew. We also had tarali, which is this little like O-shaped pugliese. Wait, what do we say in English? Apulian?
Apulian.
Apulian.
Nailed it.
Cracker with olive oil in the dough. This one has fennel. Oh my God, if you've never had tarali, go get some. They're so good. It's a really short dough. Wouldn't you say? I mean, it's really crunchy. Like,
Yeah, they're really good.
And like you can tell it's like nice and fatty.
Yeah.
In our household, when I buy them, which is rarely, although they're not terribly expensive. I think this bag is like $3.99.
I think it was like $5.99.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I bought some at De Laurenti that had a sticker on it that said $3.99.
Well, either that sticker was a lie or they've charged less for something at De Laurenti than somewhere
insane.
Else. That seems impossible.
Anyway, but we call these fancy Italian crackers.
That's exactly what they are.
Yeah, that's their name now.
I think we've talked about the Trader Joe's rosemary crackers, which I'm sure cost less than $3.99.
Those
would be great on a charcuterie platter.
How do you feel about things like honey or jellies or jams showing up here.
I don't mind having them there. I think it has a festive feel to it, but I'm not going to use them myself.
I think those go with cheeses anyway, yeah. Not so much with charcuterie.
Yeah, although I do, this is definitely the same thing. I love drizzling maple syrup on my breakfast sausage.
Oh, yeah. 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 Okay. What about, like, do you want crackers or do you want bread or do you even want anything with charcuterie?
No, that's a good question. I think bread would be my first choice. I really like sticking a couple of salami slices on a hunk of bread. Mm-hmm. And, like, it can be sliced bread or I can just tear off a hunk. I don't mind being, like, wild, carnal.
Yeah.
I don't mind being carnal.
Cool.
Yeah, when people see me tear a chunk off of bread, they
said that guy is carnal.
That is a carnal guy.
So, what are your favorite charcuterie platum?
Oh, platter, okay. My items. Favorite platums, which is Latin for a single item you put on a platter. Any kind of dry cured ham. It could be prosciutto di Parma, prosciutto di San Daniele, Serrano ham, Iberico ham, that French one.
French one. What is that French one? Jambon de Bayonne.
Yes. There we go. Mm-hmm. Any kind of salami, really, but especially like a chunky, like soppressata or other spicy, chunky salami.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I always, if speck, which is like, like smoked prosciutto, sort of, if that ever shows up, that's always kind of exciting.
That is good stuff.
I forget it exists, but it's exciting. I have to mention the culatello from Salumi, which I've never had anywhere else, but got, you know, like 20 years ago when...
Is the culatello, is that like what is it?
It's a different, as I recall, it's, so whereas prosciutto is like the kind of big whole leg.
Yeah.
This is like a smaller ham. Is it like the picnic ham or something?
Maybe.
Or the... Anyway, I think that it was also maybe cured, like, I feel like, were they ground nuts or something in there? Like,
that
it always
be.
Had an almondy kind of vibe to it. It was so delicate.
I think culatello is Italian for, like, little butt, right?
That seems right.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sure that we have listeners who will let us know how wrong we've gotten this. But culatello was always really special, but I think it's so special that nobody puts that on a charcuterie platter.
No, they just like ever. Eat it themselves in the kitchen and then claim they never existed.
Yeah, exactly. I've never encountered Serrano or Jamón Ibérico on like an assorted platter of charcuterie. It's always like a special thing that you pay like $18 per ounce for.
Yeah. And, well, I don't think Serrano is necessarily more expensive or fancy than like a prosciutto di Parma. I think of those as being like on the same plane.
I agree. Except I guess I'm thinking of when there used to be, so when Renee Erickson used to own a bar called Barnacle in Ballard, they had a special like Jamón rack.
Of course.
You know, that you fit it into.
Oh, yes.
And then you like hand slice it with a knife.
A saber.
I'm pretty sure it was Serrano, but it was like so delicious and so special and very expensive, possibly just because it was an expensive bar.
Can you slice meats with a laser?
Probably.
Okay.
Oh my God, Matthew, do you know what I just remembered?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So 13 years ago this summer,
2009?
Yeah.
Okay.
I went on this press trip with Francis Lamb.
To Italy. And I was very jealous.
Oh my God. It was insane. I went on this press trip Francis hooked me up with.
Yeah.
I do remember, I always feel like cringy about like big like Chamber of Commerce dinners and things.
Oh, of course.
Back in the early days of food writing when we used to get invited to those things. The Naples Chamber of Commerce put on like a big dinner type thing and had this guy that was there slicing. It must have been prosciutto, but in my memory, it's Jamón Ibérico, although we were in southern Italy.
Okay.
But anyway, this guy had a long ponytail. And the rack with this leg of pork was kind of in the middle of the room. And he cut it so theatrically. I mean, like he was a matador.
Yeah.
And the pork rack was the bowl. He was dancing around that thing with his saber. And it was so embarrassing to be the ones who were being performed for. And yet so delicious.
Could you tip him?
I want that guy to come help me assemble charcuterie platters.
I mean, I think at the right price, you can get that guy.
I wish I remembered his name.
When I saw this, I think his name was like Il Prosciuttador. when I saw like the theatrical ham slicing, it was at the Worlds of Flavor conference at the Culinary Institute of America in Napa. Mm-hmm. And it was a Spanish food conference. And this was just before importing Iberico ham became legal. So they did not have it. So it was Serrano, but it was a good quality Serrano ham that was sliced theatrically from a ham.
I think
rack.
It tastes better that way.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the dance makes it taste better.
Yes, the anticipation.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, if I were like wildly, wildly wealthy, I would put jamón ibérico on every charcuterie platter.
I think I've bought it once.
I have bought it once as well, and it didn't compare. Like I just
it was very good, but I haven't bought it again because I think it was like $160 a pound, something like that.
Yeah,
I didn't get a pound.
I bought like an ounce and a half or something. And I remember I was in a very like treat yourself kind of mood that day. But I think that it's one of those things that I want to eat in a place that I don't know, like isn't my own kitchen.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's
too good for my kitchen.
It's too good for my kitchen. It's too good for me. And I need to be somewhere else where I can pretend I'm not me.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
You also mentioned that you like olives on a platter. I'm not an olive person, but I want you to have them.
Thank you. Specifically a green type of olive, whether like Castelvetrano, Picholine, Luke, any of those things.
Maybe we should get trained and certified as ham slicers. Like how long do you think the apprenticeship process is? Or can you just take a Zoom class?
Let's find out.
Okay.
Hey, let's find out. And we'll let you know sometime, everybody.
Yeah, because that sounds tax deductible to
it
me.
It totally does. Yeah. Okay.
And we would have to get an entire Serrano ham and one of those racks and a saber or a scimitar, maybe.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Or a laser pointer.
Or a laser pointer.
Wand.
Yeah.
A wand.
A magic wand.
A magic wand.
Okay.
Okay. That's all we've got today, folks.
I put a heading that says history.
But there is no history.
We don't have a history of charcuterie plates.
No. But I have a now but wow. So my now but wow this week is a book that came out. Hold on.
A book that is sitting on my shelf that I haven't read yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So this now but wow is a book. I'm so sorry to our listeners who are overwhelmed by the sheer number of books I keep throwing at you. This book.
You should stop throwing books at our listeners. It's like they're getting hurt.
This book came out about 2 months ago. So if you're lucky, it means that you won't have to wait too long at your local library in order to get it.
Or it might be on Peak Picks.
It is called Essential Labor, Mothering as Social Change by Angela Garbez, a fellow Seattleite. Angela Garbez had a wonderful book called Like a Mother that came out, I believe, in 2019.
That sounds right.
And is a much needed feminist take on pregnancy and childbirth. Fantastic book. And Essential Labor, Angela wrote during the pandemic. And it is exactly the book that I think many of us parents have been dying for. And that I think everybody needs to read because it really looks hard at the way that we undervalue parenting in this country and sort of the radical possibilities of parenting.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that's Essential Labor by Angela Garbez.
Our producer is Abby Circatella.
And you can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
How much of the like 8 minutes of chewing do you think Abby is going to leave in at the beginning of this episode?
I can't wait to find out.
Yeah. Like that's all we can think about these days.
Mm-hmm.
You can catch up with other people who listen to the show on Reddit at reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk. It's a group of nice people.
Yeah.
I just want to eat more salamis.
Me too. Well, thanks for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that's groaning to see you.
I'm Matthew Efterburton.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
Because that's like not even a pun.
No, it doesn't make any sense. This is going
to
be fun.
Yeah, this is nice. Let's take a picture and send it to Abby.
Okay.
So she can know what she didn't have. Yeah, because Abby's not eating anything good in Portugal.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, very tasty.
I'm busy.
And I'm Matthew.
And I'm eating stuff.
Okay. I haven't tried this big boy yet.
I need a little bit more time, but then I'll be ready. I'm sorry, Abby. It feels like I am out of control here. I'm so pleased. Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. I can hold off now for a little while. Wow, that was just an orgy of charcuterie eating.
I'm almost done chewing.
Okay. Take your time.
It's okay. We've only been chewing for 8 minutes.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.